Welcome to the Retail Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Darius Bassefi, and this interview was recorded at the Shop Talk 2018 conference in Las Vegas. Please excuse the background noise as these interviews were recorded in a live and open conference environment. Hope you enjoy the conversation. Speaking with Aaron Hamilton from Vantage and Connor Ryan from Stitcher Ads. Both companies actually work on using AI to make advertising better. So I'll start with Aaron. If you can tell me, what is Vantage and how do you make ads more effective using AI?
Thanks very much, Darius. Great to finally be on here, a big fan. Basically, what Vantage is the application of AI to the vast amount of data that's coming at retailers today, both the large multi-brand retailers and the large CPG firms that are going direct to consumers. And they have this significant amount of data coming at them, and we think that amount of data is going to increase at an exponential rate over the next few years. Many more sources and a ton more data. So, you know, trying to transform that data into something usable and crossing that chasm into insight is a real challenge. But of course, you know, even harder is to transform that insight into action. And what we're able to do is to apply predictive analytics and machine learning and artificial intelligence to that vast amount of data to allow us to go from insight of data into insight and insight into action.
Okay, interesting. Thank you. So, Connor, how do you handle or address this problem?
So we approach the problem in a similar fashion. The core problem we're trying to solve is for omni-channel advertising. So we're about taking the online data and actually joining that with in-store data to not only attribute sales to our customers' ads that they're running on Facebook and Instagram, but to also then, like Aaron, to actually run some prediction on that data to establish what products customers will buy in-store in specific cities, states, or regions around America. So essentially, we're allowing retailers to leverage their in-store data to optimize their mobile ads on Facebook and Instagram.
So is the biggest opportunity and gap in online commerce right now or in the store physically?
Well, it's definitely in the store physically. I mean, like, you know, e-commerce is just it's very small, growing and growing at a significant rate, faster than traditional in-store sales are, but it's still a very small amount of the total overall retail picture. Brands and retailers are putting a higher value on those e-commerce sales because of the rate of growth and because of the amount of data that flows around that and the learnings that they can get out of it. So that's why great companies like Stitcher and Vantage are both working to solve this problem of overlaying the in-store and the online data to get a better picture of how people are shopping.
Same in your experience.
Yeah, the challenge right now is, as Aaron mentioned, the online is pretty sophisticated and advanced at this stage, but because the data is easily accessible, because it's all online. But when you go in store, it becomes a lot more difficult to aggregate that data. So you've got different point of sale systems, you've got e-receipt systems, loyalty systems, CRM systems, in-store kiosks. So the data is quite disparate in the different systems that it's actually stored in. And we help our clients then to actually get it out of all of those systems. We take it, we process it, and then we pass it on to partners like Facebook, who can use it then, leverage it then to attribute those sales. And we also use the data then for that optimization through that data processing and analytics to figure out different trends for different products in different geographies.
And that's actually one of the areas that I think we're different, is that we don't necessarily pass all that data back to Facebook. We developed our technology in partnership with Facebook. And a key part of our tech architecture is that we don't pass all of the retailer and the consumer data onto Facebook. The idea is to make sure that the retailer has the data and gets the best use of it, but that Facebook only has the bare bones of what it needs. And because we are integrated back in with the retailers, we're able to optimize those ad campaigns in real time based on how we're seeing things convert. The the key is that no one really knows when you're launching these campaigns, you know, what's going to convert the best. So in the example of the work we did with Walmart and Huggies, for example, we ran 1,200 different variations of ads across a dozen different audiences of things that, you know, how we saw people shopping on the store. And then we optimized those in real time based on how we were seeing people convert.
Yeah, so of course everybody is aware of all the public attention right now on Facebook and the amount of data that they have and how they use it actually. So I'm sure that any data that's shared with Facebook is probably anonymized, right? Or is it? What is the data that is shared with Facebook?
So, and Aaron is right. There's retailers are very concerned about the amount of data that they can pass to Facebook, and we take a similar approach to you, Aaron, in that we only send Facebook the data that needs to be sent for attribution. And essentially what that data is it's something like an email address attached to a transaction that Facebook is then able to match to a user on Facebook and identify if they saw an ad or not. And that's fundamentally how they use that data for attribution.
So does the user actually know this is happening?
Yes, the retailer's data policies have to allow them to use that data in that fashion for them to be able to pass that data to anybody.
And this basically goes to, you know, as a shopper, we're all shoppers, nobody reads those agreements, right? And then when we find out that, how did Facebook know I was here? Then we go and, of course, it was in the small print somewhere in that. So I think that's actually one of my pet peeves, is that all these agreements, they're worthless as far as the consumers are concerned, because you never read them. So hopefully somebody will come up with a technology solution to make these agreements more like intelligent. But this is where not having something like that right now is really the responsibility of the vendors like yourself and Facebook and the retailers to look out and think about the shopper. So.
And there's 2 points I'd just like to make on that, just so that we're explicit about what data is passed and how it's passed. So first of all, yeah, the retailer has to have in its data use policy the permission, explicit permission of the customer to do that. Secondly, there is never actually any identity information passed from Facebook back to the actual retailer. It's essentially a hashed or an encrypted version of any of that personal data.
So not the actual email? You said email.
It's not the actual email address. It's a hashed version of that email address to make sure that that identity is protected as that information is exchanged. And again, Facebook will never say to an actual retailer that Connor actually was the person who did that transaction. Facebook will say at that campaign level, this many people actually converted, so that there's no actual, the loop is never closed on that data, and that the Facebook user is fully protected.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, okay, that's important.
It is important, and we have to understand that, you know, for all the attacks that people are making on Facebook, Facebook's taking this really seriously, and they work really hard to make sure that, you know, no one has information about their users and who's seeing the ads. And they take it really seriously to try to protect people's data, the users' data. But the idea, of course, is that if you're not paying for Facebook, you have to understand that theirs is an advertising-based model, and that means that you're going to see ads. And the question is, what is better? Do you, as an experience, as a consumer, would you like to see random ads thrown at you that aren't relevant in any way, shape, or form, or ones that are customized based on how you spend your day and what you're interested in? And, you know, Facebook, I think, walks a tough line between giving people insight, or organizations insight about what your interests are, and protecting your privacy.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, most of the heat Facebook is receiving right now is really not for their ads necessarily, it's for the fake news. So, now, of course, there are some ads as well that drive people to these fake news articles. So, But it is a massive problem, and I mean, just from hearing from the outside, I do know that they're really working on it. This is a really big challenge for them, and they're working to try to solve it. So Now, talking about AI, I talk to a lot of companies, and everybody says, I'm using AI, I'm using machine learning, and you know, it's one of those buzzwords right now, just like blockchain. I'm sure you're thinking about blockchain too, right? No. Anyway, so how do you actually use AI that actually makes this whole process so much better?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Darius. And you know, for the longest time, you know, we were pretty reluctant to go out and be talking about the way that we're applying these technologies to the way we work, because it sounded like we were pandering to, you know, to you know, the venture capitalists and things like that. But the fact is that that increasingly these large retailers and the vendors and brands that they work with have a mandate to be investigating and leveraging these technologies, and it's important that we say to the large, you know, we're doing some really neat work with Fresh Direct right now, and the opportunity to help Fresh Direct to learn and to apply AI in a way that helps them drive their business and be more profitable is something that's really attractive to them and us. And so we're working with more and more grocers and large retailers to help them figure out how to apply these technologies in a way that makes sense.
That's very interesting. I just interviewed the CEO of a grocery delivery company in the Bay Area, and they're using also AI to predict the inventory so that they have less waste, which is a big problem in the grocery business.
Yeah, and if you think about it, like, you know, a lot of the stores may have a policy that's, you know, free shipping over X dollars, or that, you know, you get this kind of a discount. But the way, you know, one of the ways that we apply artificial intelligence is to do those offers dynamically based on how people are shopping and the way that they're experiencing the site or behaving on the site, and what they're adding to the cart and what they're not adding to the cart. And then we can make those, you know, intelligent offers to them based on what they're doing. Very personalization. It's all about personalization and making sure that the consumer feels that they're building a better relationship with the retailer.
Right. The holy grail is that the consumer finds what they're looking for and receives what they thought they purchased. So for grocery, that's actually a key thing, just to make sure that if I buy bananas, I'm going to get bananas that are not green and they're not ripe.
Yeah, and helping the retailers to manage their supply chains and helping the retailers to manage their margins. I mean, let's be honest, retail is is not having the easiest time. It's an exciting time to be in retail because there's so many cool opportunities, but you know, margins are thin, and it's all about trying to help these retailers to kind of keep going and figure out really cool ways of applying the technology to their data so that they can be more efficient. No one at any retailer, I don't think, is handing a team saying, listen, go get more, hire more people and spend more money on advertising and take a bigger budget and take more time. They're saying, do more with less. And artificial intelligence is a great way to achieve that.
So as far as like proving the value that you bring to your customers, what metrics do you measure and how do you actually display that value to the customers?
So it's very simple in our case. The metrics that we're measuring are sales, online sales, in-store sales, or collectively omni-channel sales. And that's where we charge. So we don't charge at the system integration level, integrating with the point of sale or any of that stuff. We charge based on the actual success.
Performance, basically, success.
It's all performance-based. It's the success that they're getting out of the actual ad spend that is enabled through that data and the intelligence we're extracting from the data.
Is that pretty much the minimum or the best way for vendors to go into retail these days, to be performance based and minimize the like upfront cost?
You know, I think we have to be realistic about the environment that we're in. But you know, there's a lot to be said that if there's no money on the table, that there's no skin in the game, and it's hard to get, you know, the next meeting scheduled because people are focusing on where their expenses are. We walk a great line between those two and build great partnerships that, you know, make the retailers and the brands want to work together with us in order to move the business ahead.
So how does Vantage charge? Is it performance based as well, or?
Yeah, so a lot of our business is performance based. We'll often charge a small percentage of the ad spend because unlike Stitcher, our primary focus will be return on ad spend.
Okay.
Vantage is the kind of acknowledged leader in driving return on ad spend. Over the last 3.5 years, we've been running Facebook and Instagram ads optimized based on the real-time data that we have. Our average return on ad spend is 13.8x, almost 14x return on for every dollar being spent.
So what does that mean? Every dollar that I spend, I will get $14 back?
Every dollar the retailers or the brands are spending on ads, our average return on that is almost $14.
And how much is it without Vantage?
Yeah, so I mean, if you talk to those that are out there, they'll say that a decent agency that's working, probably using humans to do this old-fashioned way. Apparently, I'm saying this tongue-in-cheek because it just seems extraordinary to me that we're talking only about working.
What, a human is doing this?
I mean, it's just crazy how it's come apart and so come along in the last few years, but. The idea is that if you are doing this, using manual means, you might only optimize a campaign, say once a week. Whereas because of our AI applications, we're able to optimize every hour on the hour. And so, someone that's doing this as an agency without this kind of technology might be getting a 3x return. If they're doing quite well, they may be getting a 4x return. And if they're doing a 5x return, they're getting a case study published on Facebook. Because on Facebook, you go look and see how everyone's doing, they'll say a 5x return is extraordinary. I'll say it again, Vantage's average return for the last 3 years is almost 14x.
Okay, so you go based on ad savings on ad return on ad spend.
We're very simple.
Okay.
Very simple.
Okay. So can you share what your numbers are like?
The question I was going to ask Aaron is, what attribution model is that on, right? Because in the online world, and traditionally it would be last click, but now as you move into omnichannel, and we're actually not just measuring click-through, but also view-through on mobile devices to in-store sales, the attribution model becomes a lot more complicated.
You have to dramatically discount the view through. I mean, quite frankly, a lot of the retailers and brands we work with will 100% discount that or bring it down to a very small amount. So you really can't. I mean, Facebook will take claim for it, but as an objective third party that we are, we have to work with the brands and retailers and to be realistic about. You cannot say that an ad driving someone into Walmart or into Fresh Direct or into any of these major brands that we work with, they have so many touches on the consumers today that just because someone also saw a Facebook ad doesn't mean that the Facebook ad was causation. It may be correlation, but it's not causation.
So how do you go down that tunnel to find out?
It depends on the sophistication of the retailer. So a lot of retailers that we would work with multi-touch attribution vendors like Newstar, and they're actually able to work alongside them and run lift studies where we will split that audience. These audience don't see any ads, these see ads, they only view those ads. What's the actual lift in that cohort? So we do sophisticated studies to prove what the attribution, and it's never 100% attribution, as Aaron says. You cannot say that somebody saw an ad and converted to that pair of sneakers. But we understand that then, and they say, look, we're kind of 15% on the future attribution, and we've got in our custom metrics, then we're able to feed that into the engine to take account of that based on more sophisticated vendors than us who look after that multi-touch attribution piece.
Okay, basically build in some kind of an error into the numbers,
discount factor.
Yeah. But you do your lift studies where you've got your holdout group and you actually measure the incremental lift that you're getting based on that campaign that you're measuring against.
Okay, great. So I'll finish with a couple of other questions. Now, have you heard of the concept of day one?
Yeah, absolutely. But in which context?
In the context that Jeff Bezos and Amazon talks about it. Have you heard it?
I don't think I have. Go on, take me through it, Darius.
Talk us through it, Darius. No? I'm not going to assume to know.
Okay, well, you need to go read his 1997 letter to the investors, yeah. Of course. But day one is a concept of continuous innovation, especially when you're ahead. So people innovate when they're behind usually, but not when they're ahead. This is every day, even when you're ahead, you actually innovate more. So that's what he drives into Amazon. And that's actually, I'm looking at doing a brand new podcast of, because the concept itself, again, day one, it's a word, but how do you actually do it? What are the specific things that you do every day to do this? What is the language? There is a language that we use ourselves, and there's the language a lot of times limits us from what we even tell ourselves. So there's a specific language. So that's why I'm interested to find out, let's say, like, if you are ahead, do you rest? What do you do when you're number one by a factor of four?
There's a lever right there.
Yeah. That's, yeah, no, I mean...
So you said that Vantage is a leader. Now, that's another different word that I want to, like, quantify more, but what does a leader do to stay and become even more of a leader?
Yes. You know, I think we listen. That's the biggest thing that we do. We work with great partners like Facebook and Instagram, and we work with great retail partners like Fresh Direct, who are, you know, doing really, really exciting things, and we're just thrilled to kind of listen to them and see where they see the opportunities are. You know, stuff that you work with great brands like those at Kimberly Clark and thinkers like Tony Long there, the e-commerce capabilities lead at Kimberly Clark, and Warren McKay Smith over at Unilever, the guys that are just, you know, pushing the envelope to try to see how to apply new technology into really exciting new ways. And you listen and you try to work as quickly as you can to help these leaders fulfill their visions.
Okay, and...
Yeah, and I think it's the key part there is a lot around the partnerships. When you have some credibility and some leadership in a field, then it becomes a lot easier to work with more partners to do more things. And for us as a company, culturally, I like to embrace the willingness to fail, I think, is a key part of innovation, because a lot of the things you do won't work, but you got to keep trying them, and you cannot be dissuaded by failure when it doesn't work. So we run a lot of tests, a lot of alphas. I'm sure Aaron has worked on a lot of alphas with Facebook that have never made it to beta, and betas that have never made it into general release. And it's having the appetite. I think the appetite to aggressively and rapidly fail, for me, is a core to driving innovation in our company.
Right. Yeah, this is very interesting. So the like, advertising is also both art and science, right? Is it more now with AI and all the technology and everything, is it becoming more science than art?
No, it's not. I mean, everything has its place, and you'll never replace the magic of great creative. But you know what you can do is you can test five different pieces of creative across a bunch of different segments and see what resonates with whom, and see how to best play that up. So before you go run to build your $2 million ad commercial, you can work with Vantage and spend, you know, $10,000 on testing a whole bunch of different iterations and versions of that and see what resonates with each of your, you know, target segments. And that's the kind of thing that we do more and more of, is help, you know, spend that big money really well.
Right.
And I would totally agree. And if you want to break that down, creative and art is becoming more important, because if we want to personalize to the level, to the individual level that we do, then we need more and more and more creative to do that for those different segments. The segments, the science is enabling the segments to get smaller. And as the segments get smaller, we need to personalize. And to achieve that personalization, we need more creative.
Right.
So the volume of creative that we need now is, you know, I don't know how many factors beyond what we would have needed 5 or 10 years ago. Would you agree, Aaron? As in, because we're doing our personalization, we need much more creative now.
Yeah, and in more formats. I mean, so, you know, we're seeing for the first time in North America, you know, mobile conversions and actual people purchasing and executing on the transactions, you know, just soaring. And we this was predicted over the last decade, but we're really seeing North American moms doing those conversions and checking out right on phone. And this is something very, very new. So that means a whole new type of ad creative has to get spun up very quickly.
What about voice? Things like Alexa and Google Assistant, people buying...
Yeah, less personalization there, because Alexa is kind of the same for everybody, and the AI will kind of help in that experience. But we are seeing, you know, huge opportunities for convenience, and there are a lot of ways that shopping can get a whole lot more convenient. But let's be honest, shopping can be fun. The key is to, you know, focus on making it more possible for you to do the fun things without the not so fun things.
So, Connor, where is Stitcher Ads out of?
Originally an Irish company.
Okay.
We are based out of Ireland, London. We've got an office in South Africa. And I'm based out of Austin, Texas. Can you not tell from my accent?
Of course, yes. You do definitely have a Texan accent. And so thank you so much. This is an innovative company out of Ireland, and also Vantage is from Toronto, another great company from Toronto. Yeah.
Our dev team's out of Toronto. We have a huge retail hub of exciting development happening in Toronto, and some really cool companies that actually, a number of which have been acquired in the last few months and years. So, you know, we're really excited at the amount of talent that's up there in Toronto and the opportunities that means. We get great people to work with, and people are recognizing Toronto as a major player in the space.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, gentlemen. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thanks very much, Darius.
Thank you.
Thanks, Connor.
Thanks, Darius.